what's on your mind. If there's a subject you'd like to learn more about or a topic we haven't covered in a while, let us know. Just email Mo at compaq.com. That's M-O-E at C-O-M-P-A-K.com. Then sit back and enjoy the show. This is Market Wrap with Mo Ansari.
Welcome back, everyone, to Market Wrap. I'm Mo Ansari, president of Compaq Asset Management, and you're tuned in as you've been doing so for over two decades now. And as always, you can call in, and I will be more than happy to share with you my 34 years of trading experience. But for the next few minutes, hold your calls as we do every day at this time of the day. We go to our guest line, and today we have a very special guest. We have Congressman Ed Royce. He represents California's 40th Congressional District. Congressman Royce is currently serving his ninth term in Congress and is a member of the Financial Services Committee and the Committee on Foreign Affairs. Within the Financial Services Committee, he sits on three subcommittees: Capital Markets, Insurance and Government-Sponsored Enterprise, Financial Institutions, and Consumer Credit and Oversight and Investigations. Congressman Royce has served on the Conference Committee for some of the most significant legislation in the financial services arena, including the reconciliation of the financial regulation bill that we got out of Congress. I believe it will be coming out of Congress this week, but there was the agreement last Friday after that marathon session. Congressman, welcome to Market Wrap.
Thank you, Mo.
Thank you for being with us today. There was this 24-hour session, and finally the reconciliation between the Senate and the House. We got that reconciliation bill. Are you happy with it?
Well, I'm happy with certain parts of it, but there are other parts that give me considerable concern. I was able to get some provisions of my own in the legislation, including establishing a separate office within the SEC, mm-hmm. a whistleblower office. We had worked with Harry Markopoulos, who had attempted to call attention to Bernie Madoff's Ponzi schemes.
Yes.
And as you know, one of the realities is that most of these detections of fraud schemes, 54% of them, come mm-hmm. from whistleblower tips. Mm-hmm. Only 4% of them come from audits where the SEC actually finds it on their own. So mm-hmm. I think it's very important that we understand the over-lawyered nature of the SEC. We did get this change in, which ought to change SEC behavior. Mm-hmm. But, Mo, I'll tell you a concern I have, and you may share it. You can give me your view of this. Goldman Sachs, it seems to me, would be a big winner coming out of this, because one thing was done in this legislation that I really disagreed with.
And that is?
I think that at the end of the day, big banks have got to be allowed to fail. You've got to set up some system which is like bankruptcy. And the concern I have with the system that they set up instead
will allow
the creditors who loan to an entity like Goldman to believe that the FDIC is going to bail them out at close to 100 cents on the dollar. Uh-huh. And so Goldman is going to be able to borrow at a much lower rate, for example. I'm using them as an example. Any systemically important firm is going to be able to borrow at a less rate.
Because they've got the implicit guarantee that the government is going to stand behind them, that if they do get into trouble. So what you're saying, Congressman, is we did not really resolve the problem of too big to fail.
Exactly. And I think we may have compounded it, because at the end of the day, anyone who does business with a firm has to know that if the firm makes bad investment decisions, they're going to be on the losing end. This conference committee now does just the opposite. It allows the government to reward bad behavior in a way, and prop up those institutions. That's my main criticism of the legislation.
Well, they said they set up this $50 billion fund that is going to be funded by the banks, and that is
right.
going to be used to liquidate the banks if they do get into trouble.
Yes, yes.
What was that all about? Does that not say that, look, if you do the same things you were doing, the bad behavior, that you will go into bankruptcy?
Mo, what it tells you is that for the bank itself, I concur. If you're a shareholder in the bank, you might know that the bank is going to go into bankruptcy.
Right.
But if you're loaning to
right.
the bank, if you're the creditor,
right.
now the FDIC did their own study, and they say when there's a perceived government backstop, it's worth about 100 basis points advantage in
right.
the market.
At
so
least.
So then that means that these firms will grow faster than their too small to save counterparts. That's why I think this alternative of working out, I tried to put in a provision mm-hmm. that would have given a greater haircut to the creditors
right.
So that it would more approximate what you'd have if you went into bankruptcy. That way you'd have apples and apples and you wouldn't distort the market as much as I'm afraid this would. I was one of the critics of the way Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac got
that's such my next
an
question that we have had serious issues with that where we had this implicit guarantee of Fannie and Freddie and now we have the basically it is a guarantee that they paper and the creditors right now are getting 200 basis points over treasuries while it is similar paper to treasuries because the U.S. government is going to stand behind Fannie and Freddie. How are we going to unwind this? We've lost $400 billion approximately, plus or minus, yes. in Fannie and Freddie.
Right.
We're losing about $20 billion a month in these entities. How long can this continue, and how are we going to wind this down, Congressman? Do we have any answers to that at all?
Well, I attempted on our side to offer some amendments, and of course Chairman Dodd and Chairman Barney Frank did not want to get into the issue of Fannie and Freddie,
mm-hmm.
so they kept it out of the bill. But as you've pointed out, you know, they ended up with nearly $2 trillion worth of subprime and Alt-A loan. 85% of the losses at Fannie and Freddie were caused by the mandates that the politicians put on Fannie and Freddie to go out and reach these affordable housing goals. They did it, of course, by loading up on these very risky subprime loans. And what is most galling to me, I had the legislation in 2005 which attempted to give the regulators the ability to regulate Fannie and Freddie for systemic risk and slowly unwind those mortgage portfolios that held so much subprime in them.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, when those went bust, it created the collapse in housing, and the rest fell after it, just as the Federal Reserve in 2004 warned would happen if we didn't do anything. And now, as you point out, nothing's been done in this legislation to address either how to wind down Fannie or Freddie or how to handle the affordable housing goals in the future. So I think that's another criticism that we can make of the bill.
We are talking to Congressman Ed Royce. He represents California's 40th congressional district. Congressman, let's move forward a little
yes.
bit and talk about stimulus or austerity. That is the big G20 meeting this weekend. Europe wants austerity. We want stimulus. How can we continue to say, okay, we want stimulus, it's great, but we just don't have the money? How can we continue to spend money we do not have and then expect that it's going to be okay?
Well, and of course, will it really stimulate if you're borrowing 40% of it from overseas? This was the argument that Hayek, the great economist, made in The Road to Serfdom. I noticed the book is back on the top 10 bestseller list today. And indeed, you know, Friedrich Hayek, the great Austrian economist, was able to look very, very logically at this. And I think he would tell us today, if we were debating this issue, that we should listen to our European counterparts. They are trying to tell us that when you're expanding government agencies, government bureaucracies at 12% a year, and you're compounding that, you're taking money out of the private sector. You might think that because you keep expanding these government salaries and government positions that you're creating more productivity, but what you're missing is what you're implicitly taking out of the private sector to do it. And so the concern that I have in all of this is that the balance between private and public is becoming so lopsided that the market is going to be apprehensive and realize that we have to pay all of this back with interest, and that's going to be sort of a lug on the engine. That's going to hold capital in abeyance on the sidelines until they see certainty come back in terms of the long-term prospects for getting out of these deficits. I think the last point I'd make on this is that Ben Bernanke has warned Congress repeatedly. He says these budgets we're now seeing 10 years out are not sustainable. They're simply not sustainable because there's no plan to eliminate the deficits in the out years. So I do think the Europeans are right. It is time to recognize that we have to confront, for example, some of the pension liabilities, some of these issues. We lament that in Greece people retire at 52, and we say that's not sustainable, but in California many people retire at 50
that are
working for the federal government. So we're making the same mistake. At least they're learning from their mistakes overseas. I hope we learn here soon.
Congressman, that's the concern. What is the end game? Because if this continues, everybody says, look, we're going to only do this deficit spending for a couple of years, and then we're going to wind this down. But I've never seen a government program that has started and just sort of gone away. Whenever you start a new agency, a new department, it sort of grows by itself. That's what I think so many people are concerned, and the money has to come from somewhere. There's only so much of the pie, and if the government takes most of the pie, it will squeeze out the private sector of our economy, which is the engine. That's what drives and that's what creates jobs. What is the end game? Are there any solutions on the horizon, or we are just going down this path until catastrophe hits?
Yeah, I think the problem here is that the idea that as we expand the public sector, that this might be temporary. The concern I have here is that every time you expand the power of the public sector at the expense of the private, you also expand the ability of the lobby for the public sector, which becomes stronger and stronger. I'll just give an example of a quasi-governmental agency. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were government-sponsored enterprises.
Right.
When the regulators came up here and said, okay, now we've got to do something to deleverage their portfolios, we have to regulate them for systemic risk, by then they'd become a duopoly. They'd become so powerful that they were more powerful, in the words of the Fed at the time, than any other institution. Once you create public institutions or quasi-public institutions, even when you move to try to rein them in, by then there are so many employees or the union is so powerful with so many members in it that it becomes almost impossible. Witness what happens in Athens when, you know, in Greece when these issues hit the streets.
Yeah.
They become so powerful that it's as though even when it's in society's evident interest in curtailing their abuses just a little bit, you still see people yelling for more, 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 even when it's not sustainable. So I think that that's why we've got to keep government checked, limited government, you know, under a republic, I think, is an enlightened way to advance a society. And unlimited government with unlimited borrowing and political power and political interference, let's call it political pull, when that replaces market discipline, Mo, you have another thing you have to worry about, and that's the reality that those who are politically well connected with a government that becomes all powerful will not move in the interests of the advance of society, but instead
their own narrow interests. Congressman, I want to thank you for taking the time out today and sort of giving us an idea of what is going on in Washington. How is this financial regulation bill really going to impact? And is it going to change everything? Unfortunately, it is a step in the right direction, but it is a very small step. That's what you're telling us. Thank you again for being with us today.
Thank you very much, Paul. Bye.
That's Congressman Ed Royce. He represents California's 4th year congressional district, and he was in these negotiations. He was there present between the House and the Senate negotiations when all of this was getting done, and this is his view. You are listening to the daily edition of Market Wrap. I'm Mo Ansari. I'm going to take a short break. When I come back, we'll take a look at the markets, what happened today. We'll take a look at some of the charts. What are the markets trying to tell us? Gold was down today, so we will take a look at that. Gold was down over $15. Crude oil was also lower on the day. Markets are sort of tired. What are they trying to tell us? We'll talk about that, and I'll take a look at the charts. That's the language of the markets. You are listening to the Daily Edition. I'm Mo Ansari. Stay tuned. I'm going to take a short break, and I will be right back.